Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
And welcome to episode 346 of the Battery Power Podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, coming to you deep into the night on a Saturday. It's April 23rd, about to be April 24th, and I am joined by Eric Cole. Hello, sir.
Bradford, it has been too long since we've got to talk baseball. So how are you, my friend?
It has been. And just by the way, we're recording this on Saturday night because of me. The Atlanta Hawks, the team that I cover quite a bit, has a playoff basketball game at home on Sunday. So I have to go to that. And somehow that would actually be even later than tonight. Of course, the Braves, once we decided to schedule this podcast with the two East Coast hosts of this podcast, they played about a four-hour baseball game tonight to make things difficult on us. But Eric, it has been too long, and I appreciate you being here.
It's not a problem, man. I'm already planning on leaving for a day trip like crazy early tomorrow morning. And I already knew that with minor league, I had minor league recap duty, so I knew I wasn't going to be sleeping a lot anyway. I didn't fully appreciate how bad it was going to be until just now, but you know that's okay. I'm always look forward to doing the show with you, so it's gonna be a good time.
Yeah, it will not be ending until Sunday, so just keep that in mind as you're listening to this podcast. Normally, we would record on Sunday evening into Monday, so there will be no analysis on the Sunday game because we've not watched it. Just yet, so keep that in mind. But other than that, a normal podcast on the way, and one plug here at the top. Eric is the host and of the Road to Atlanta podcast, which is on the same feed on the minor league side, and then of course the Daily Hammer as well with Sean Coleman, doing a fantastic job on that show. Please subscribe to the podcast network. You get three shows for the price of $0, and we really definitely appreciate all of the support on the podcast. As for the week that was for the Atlanta Braves, not necessarily fantastic. There was some stuff to hit on, sort of big picture stuff, and then also the fact that the Braves are still below 500. They had a chance to get back to 500 tonight with a win, and they were not able to do so. They had chances. They led at different times on Saturday, which we'll come back to later on in the show, but they're now 7-9. And Eric, basically 10% of the season is over. Obviously, that's not exactly the case, but 69 of 162 is in the books now. No reason to panic whatsoever, but the Braves have not been lighting the world on fire. And I sense some frustration in the fan base this evening. Maybe it's just because it's late at night and it was kind of a weird, bad loss in a lot of ways. But do you feel any of that? I'm not panicking at all, but is there any like nervousness level for you right now through 16 games?
Well, I mean, you'd prefer them win more yes, than lose, right? Like that's, I think that's fundamentally it. I mean, it's a tough situation because it felt like a very winnable game, and like the ways in which the Braves have lost have been pretty frustrating early in the season, where like, you know, the batted ball luck was not great. That continued today where there was some like, I think three straight batted balls with like 150 or lower expected batting average resulted in bad things happening to the Braves in this game. Versus, you know, hard hit outs that seem to be a common theme throughout, of course, first few weeks of the season. I'm not super worried, though. There's definitely been more positives to take away that over the course of a long season, I think, will even themselves out. You know, Dansby looked better at the plate. They're going to get back Ronald Acuña Jr. If you had told me that Kyle Wright was probably a leading Cy Young candidate at this moment in time in the National League, I would have laughed at you to start the season. So, and here we are where he has looked absolutely lights out. You know, they've gotten contributions from, you know, guys that you wouldn't have necessarily thought. You know, Bryce Elder's looked good. Spencer Strider's mostly looked good except for tonight. I am not worried about this team. They're not a team that's going to not score on a regular basis. And that's what's really what's doomed them so far this season, is they haven't been able to score consistently, but that's been kind of a league-wide trend too, where there's just been some weird, you know, this lack of offense in the month of April. So this, especially when Acuña gets back, this is a very good baseball team. I'm not worried about them long term, but again, it certainly would have been better if they started, you know, 14-5 or whatever, but it's, you know, that's just how it goes sometimes.
Yeah, there's this dance that you kind of have to do in April as someone who's trying to be objective and cover a baseball team. And it's like, you can't overdo it on what's happened so far on positive directions or negative directions. But also you can't just say absolutely nothing. So it's like you have to take your stands along the way and things. But it is very early still. 10% of the season is now in the books. But that means that 90% still remaining. And as we've said a couple times on this podcast over the last few months, the Braves were under 500 last year in August.
And there's nothing been about the process, or like there's not been an injury that's been damning.
No, nothing's changed. Like, I mean, that's the thing. I tweeted this week. But it was like, and I got some negative, not too much, but some negative reaction. I was like, look, my opinion of the team quality has not changed at all. Obviously, there are individual stories that we've touched on, and we'll touch on this podcast, even ranging from Kyle Wright on the positive side to other guys that are struggling. But in terms of like team quality, nothing has really changed. Ronnie's coming back pretty soon. No major injuries. The guys who are on this roster, I have not changed opinion on over the course of 2.5 weeks. It's just not going to happen like that. So I feel similarly to how I did 2.5 weeks ago. I guess the quote unquote problem is that you have now banked 9 losses. That's the only thing that's different about this at all, is that you've now secured those 9 losses, but everything else is kind of the same.
Yeah, pretty much. It just, you know, it stinks, but at the same time, like there's not, again, like there's plenty of guys that are hitting reasonably well. They haven't really kind of been able to, like the solo home run thing is kind of hysterical.
It's over, Eric. They hit a multi-run home run this evening. It happened.
Yep. From perennial bad luck candidate Alex Dickerson too.
That was very funny.
On a ball expecting batting average of 0.090.
It was one of the worst hit baseballs that he's had all season long, and it went over the fence, which is hilarious because he's been so bad. So yeah, lots of can't predict ball kind of stuff going on in the early going of the season. Kind of an appropriate way to end that little sort of broad start to the podcast. There is a little bit of news to hit on briefly. I know Sean talked about this earlier this week, but Sean Newcomb is now no longer a member of the Braves for the first time in a long time. He was DFA'd and then also traded right after that to actually reacquire an old friend, Jesse Chavez, who just pitched tonight and pitched pretty well. He was pretty good last year. People kind of forgotten that, including me almost. But I looked this up. Obviously, he was like a low 2 ERA guy. I'm not sure he was quite that good peripheral wise last year. But Jesse Chavez, at a minimum, is better than Sean Newcomb. So that helps the bullpen, you would say. Obviously, Chavez is an older guy. He's older than I am, which means you're old, basically. But he does help. There you go.
He does help the cause more. It's just kind of getting Sean Newcomb out of the bullpen as a tool that
taking the club out of the bag.
Yeah. You know, like he was the one guy that just kept being put in situations that he just did not belong in
Monday being the case, obviously. The Monday is the one that like kind of set everything off, because we won't go into all of it because Sean did it and it was, you know, 6 days ago, but basically they used Newcomb, and I won't say it's a high leverage situation, but it was certainly a mid leverage situation against Freddie Freeman and Trey Turner back to back. And that kind of ended that game in a lot of ways. And then, you know, less than a day later, he was gone. I'm not sure if that was a coincidence. I think it probably wasn't, to be honest.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you just continue to pitch badly, right. And it's one of the things that bothered me about just having Newcomb in general, is that the only reason he was in the bullpen to begin with is because he didn't have any options. If he didn't earn, nothing in spring training or what he's done in recent history made you go, he's a guy that we need in our bullpen from the left side, because this is already a bullpen that has a bunch of lefty arms, and there were just better options available to them. The decision between him and Jacob Webb was an interesting one coming out of spring, seeing as how neither one of those guys are around in the Braves organization anymore, especially since I thought Jacob Webb was significantly better. But he just, every time where you're like, okay, they're down a couple runs, here comes Sean Newcomb, and you're like, this is not going to end well. And it never ended well. He was never a guy that could put out a fire. He often caused more fires than he would put out. And it's a shame, because that was a really live arm, and there was nothing obvious to fix. The delivery was good. The stuff, like, if you just looked at what his velos were and what his pitches did, all of it lined up. It's kind of like a similar thing with Kyle Wright up until, you know, what the current incarnation of him. It's that it was very much a mental thing, and that's a tough problem to fix. And it just never lined up. He was never able to carve out a role on a consistent basis, even with a lot of arm talent. and now he's playing for the Cubs and actually made a, you know, made his appearance for the Cubs today when the Cubs were up 21-0 against the Pirates. So that lead feels pretty safe.
21-0 that happened in baseball today. By the way, let's just say this. I'm not even sure how to frame this. Wouldn't it be incredible if Newcomb was just awesome with the Cubs? Like, wouldn't that just be incredible?
I will say that it will cause a certain segment of the fan base to share a lot of thoughts on the Braves pitching coaching situation, pitching development situation. And frankly, none of that stuff's true. It's just that Sean Newcomb's perfectly talented, and we've seen him have stretches where he was really good. And he almost no-hit the Dodgers a few years ago as a starter. So it's not like he isn't capable of putting together a stretch. And we've seen guys that have left the Braves perform well. Lucas Sims was really good for a year or so as a reliever for the Reds. And those things happen. Kevin Gausman, who was, you know, historically pretty unlucky and also pretty bad with the Braves, he's now been paid quite handsomely
as a starter. Great.
And pitching awesome. One of the best pitchers in the league this year. So these things happen. It's just, you know, there's been plenty of cases too where guys who were not particularly great, stayed not great or even were worse than that for the Braves. You know, what I was happy with just these decisions is it seems like the Braves are being aggressive with how they're managing the pitching staff and particularly the bullpen. And I think that that's going to continue. They've made some promotions, one in particular, to AAA, that makes me think that they're very willing to continue to manage and get the best arms in the bullpen possible, because they know just how, with this condensed start to spring training, that, you know, starters are just having trouble, you know, getting really warmed up. And we've seen some of the starters for the Braves struggle early in the season, and they're going to continue to be aggressive. So they DFA'd Newcomb, Waskari Noah, that, you know, he's back down to Gwinnett. Hopefully he can carve out a role as a reliever. I've never really been in on him as a starter. He hasn't been good. So, you know, just being aggressive and just continuing to think outside the box to put the best rotation and bullpen together. And, you know, as long as they're using this first month where they're still trying to figure things out and actually figure things out, rather than just kind of staring at the same group of, you know, 13, 14 guys and just hoping that they figure it out. I'm all for that. So it's, you know, overall just, I actually like what a lot of these moves mean, is that they're really trying to make things happen.
I tend to agree with that for sure. And even the Enoa thing, like, I've never been the highest on him. And I know I think he's starting on Sunday in Gwinnett, if I read that correctly. And I think keeping him as a starter in Gwinnett for a while makes some sense, even if I think long-term he probably ends up being a reliever. He's still young enough where you don't want to just bail on him as a starter, even as someone who doesn't really believe in it, if that makes sense. Like, he's, you know, give him a chance to start. If it works, it works. But I think if they need him later in the season in the bullpen, they can make that happen. And he's got that live arm, obviously, and he's struggled as a starter recently, but we'll get to that when we need to. Last other sort of like newsy thing is that Ronald Acuna is getting closer. We talked about a little bit with Scott and I last week, but even the last 5-6 days, he has seemingly taken another step forward. He played 7 innings in the outfield on Friday and came out of that just fine. He DH'd tonight and reached base 5 times. Because he's
Ronald Acuna. They wanted no part of him in that game. He intentionally walked immediately in a key spot.
I don't blame anybody for doing that. Yeah, obviously, yeah. Especially in that league when he is, like, you know, the best player ever to walk in AAA. So you know, obviously that's going to be a positive. He's getting closer. Snicker did sort of acknowledge today to the media that he is not locked into May 6th as the official target date that they've been using for a while. That's still 2 weeks away. And he's going to play the outfield 3 or 4 times this week. And if it goes well, he might be up sooner rather than later. There was a little bit of like questions on Twitter about whether he can come back like this weekend. That's not obviously going to happen. They're taking it a little bit slower than that. But I think that if he had to play today, he obviously could. But being careful with him makes sense. I still, though, would take the under on May 6th based on what we know right now. Does that sound about right to you?
I think I'd take the under on making it to the month of May, if I'm being honest about it.
Yeah, I mean, you got 7 more days. I think you're gonna be right about that, probably. We'll see.
Yeah, you know, but I like what the Braves are doing, is that, you know, I don't think that they're worried about the knee. I think they're just worried about making sure that, like, things like hamstrings and quads and, you know, muscles and tendons, they're all stretched out and he's used to that. Because look, Ronnie is gonna run like his hair's on fire everywhere.
He can't not do it.
He's doing it in Gwinnett now. He probably shouldn't be, but he's like stealing bases and scoring from second on balls he shouldn't be. And, you know, it's just what Ronnie is built to just run like his hair's on fire and just make things happen everywhere on the baseball field. So they're having to like force days off, force him into the DH. So that way they can like, let's ease into this a bit. So that way you're not like running around trying to chase down balls you shouldn't be, you know, when you're rehabbing down there in right field. And Gwinnett, you know, we need you doing that stuff in, for Atlanta for 130-140 games or whatever it's going to be this year. So just getting in game shape. And, you know, when Snicker said that, it made a whole lot of sense to me. Right. Ultimately, I don't think it's going to make, I don't think there's much of a chance that he's going to make it till May 6th at all. I do think that it'll probably be, you know, in the next week or so. And he's looked great. He's not hitting home runs every game or whatever, but he's still doing a lot of damage and, you know, causing havoc down there. And when you think of a guy like that, you know, reaching base, you know, three or four times a game and what he'd look like at the top of this lineup right now, considering how well, you know, Matt Olson's been doing, Ozzie Albies being a perennial home run candidate threat all of a sudden, and you know,
MVP Albies, baby, we're well on our way. Well on our way, sir.
The numbers are pretty weird on Ozzie in terms of, you know, the 250 batting average, but somehow like,
yeah, he's slugging as of tonight after the game is over, he's slugging 581, but his OBP is like 319. He has a 214 ISO. Sorry, a 339 ISO right now, which is
That's perfectly sustainable. I'm sure that'll. I mean, we've seen him put together some halves of baseball where he hits a ton of home runs, and he looks like
Ozzie is currently tied for the major league lead in home runs with 6. So,
yeah, just like we all predicted.
He's on pace for like 60 home runs, 61 home runs, something like that.
Oh yeah, that's gonna happen for sure. I'll laugh hysterically if he clears 40.
It'd be incredible.
It won't happen. Yeah, but
MVP Albies. We're on the way.
Just a guy like Ronnie, who they just have to respect at the plate, and he's happy to take walks and then cause havoc on the base paths. Like, that's a guy that, I mean, in addition to everything else he does on the baseball field, but, you know, including hitting tape measure home runs and basically doing anything that anyone can do with a baseball bat. You can see that just if he was just in the lineup right now, that this team would be, you know, would be above 500. You know what I mean? It feels like that he is the difference. And once he's back, he's going to do, you know, he's going to do good things for him. So I'm not worried about the Braves. I'm not worried about Ronnie. He's looked great, and I can't wait for him to be back.
Yeah, he is clearly getting close. Looks great, and everybody's excited about that. And as we talked about last week a little bit, like, he just puts everything else in place for the Braves. When he returns, he checks every box: defense, lineup, leadoff guy, power, everything from Ronald Acuña. So that will be very, very helpful when he returns. Okay, before we get to the rest of the week's action and a little bit of look ahead to upcoming weeks and all that fun stuff, a word from our sponsors of the podcast today.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Eric, before we get into the games that transpired, I will tee you up here. Obviously, we have Road to Atlanta, which is for the deeper thoughts on the minor league baseball side. But anytime I have you, we've not talked about any minor league baseball. Anything that people should know that are more like casual minor league observers, say, for instance, me, someone like me that doesn't necessarily watch minor league stuff. Anybody jumping out to you at this point that you want to sort of preview into Road to Atlanta later this week or something like that?
So there's a few guys that we're kind of keeping eyes on. Rome had their single game strikeout record set by a starter, and his name is Tanner Gordon. You'll be forgiven for not predicting that happening, because we didn't have him as a top 30 prospect. So it's fun little stories like that. There's a guy in Augusta, Roybal Salinas, who has been striking out guys that'll get like a prodigious, like 22/9 rate. I think he ends up as a reliever just because there's a lot of effort, but he's been pretty fun to watch. beyond that, I mean, like Michael Harris, they've played 14 games in Mississippi and he's reached base in all of them. He's still very, very good. You know, we've seen some guys hitting some home runs. You know, Drew Lugbauer has been doing good. You know, Jesse Franklin, who I'm sure you'll be happy to know, hit a 3-run bomb tonight that would have won the game for Mississippi if you ignore what happened in the top half of the ninth inning, which was probably one of the more epic bullpen collapses I've ever seen in my life.
I was not watching, obviously, but I was following Garrett's Twitter during the game this evening about Franklin. People were tagging me about Franklin and stuff, but I was just watching him sort of live tweet the meltdown at the end of the Mississippi game.
So they were up 11-10 in the top of the ninth inning. They lost that game 18-10 or 18-11.
That's not good.
No, it was a pretty brutal one. But yeah, there's been a lot of good pitching. Jared Schuster's been good. You know, just the pitching's been particularly good in the lower levels. Beyond that, just, you know, a lot of interesting stories that we're keeping an eye on. But in terms of offense, beyond like Michael Harris's kind of those big stories, it's mostly been the pitching, which is not crazy, you know, considering what's happened to the Braves farm system on the offensive side of the ball between trades and just promotions. Just, you know, the better players seem to have been on the pitching side, but there's definitely some guys we're keeping an eye on overall.
That's a perfect primer for the upcoming Road to Atlanta podcast and everything else. And please read the minor league recaps, all that fun stuff. And great job there. Okay. We're going to fly through some of the highlights from the week. Obviously, if you want the day-to-day, Sean's doing a great job on Daily Hammer as well. And when it's not 11:30 to midnight, we'll do more of this a little bit. But, you know, it's kind of straight ahead week in a lot of ways. Obviously, Monday, the headline was the bullpen management, which we kind of touched on earlier about Newcomb. I'm going to eschew my rant for today, but I thought it was appropriate to pile on Snit a little bit on Monday for basically saving the entire bullpen Sunday and then still not using his bullpen on Monday in a close game. For instance, Tyler Matzek just hadn't pitched. I think he threw three times in the first 11 games, just kind of stuff like that, where it's the same old story. So I'm not going to, it's not anything groundbreaking for me, but that was definitely the story on Monday other than just Sean Newcomb, his final outing, it turned out to be.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I think the most predictable thing in the world was Freddie Freeman hitting a home run in his first plate appearance against the Braves. Right.
That was predictable. Yes.
He was either going to kill them or he was going to do absolutely nothing. There was no 1-for-4 with a single and a walk or anything like that happening. He was either going to mash or he wasn't. And he mashed. So,
and he did. Yes.
Yeah, you know, Waskar, you know, grooving a ball like right in his wheelhouse certainly didn't help things, but, you know, just letting him launch a ball the other way. But, you know, at the same time, I think the bigger story is just that, you know, Waskar Noah was not particularly good in that game. I think they have some better options that are available to him as starters. And I'm, you know, they pulled the plug on that pretty quickly. You know, he doesn't have the command on a consistent basis. And when he misses, and when his command is off, he can either walk a bunch of guys or he misses in the zone and gets killed. And we saw both of those things happen against the Dodgers, and that's not a team you can do that against. So overall, like, you know, it was a bummer to lose, but at the same time, it kind of illustrated the point that, you know, the Braves need to make a change, and they ultimately made that change. As for the bullpen stuff, it's frustrating to, you know, save bullpen guys as much as Snicker has and then not taking advantage of it. We don't know the full story on, like, what guys are dealing with dead arm type stuff in the bullpen. You know, there's definitely been some guys in the bullpen who haven't looked quite like themselves to start the season. So I don't necessarily want to kill him, but at the same time, you're up against a Dodgers team that you really need to put some losses on if you get the chance to. Yeah, it's just frustrating. Ultimately, it's just frustrating because, like, Snicker has had a habit of, especially with Sean Newcomb in the bullpen, that he doesn't put him in the 6-0 games. He puts him in the 3-0 games or when they're down by a run or two. And every single time it just never ends well. Yeah. And he was again, having that club in the bag, that's just when Snicker liked to use him. And it just, again, I don't know what the point, like, again, if you, I feel like there's better options that they could have at least kept things relatively close. And then if that doesn't work out, then you go to Newcomb and you just, like, run him out there for 3 innings and then you can save your bullpen that way, as opposed to put him in that kind of what you probably accurate describe as kind of a medium leverage spot. You put in a real pitcher. If that doesn't work, be willing to pull the plug quickly and then go to your garbage time guy. Newcomb has to be your garbage time guy in that situation.
And not anymore.
Nope. Yeah. Yeah. It's, it was frustrating to be sure.
Yeah, that's enough on that game. Obviously, it's a sort of similar thing that we talked about a lot. More positively was Tuesday. In fact, the Braves wins this week were all so far anyway, were a 3-1 win and a 3-0 win, and both were pitching dominant. So Max Fried looked like Max Fried on Tuesday. 7 innings of 2-hit ball with 8 strikeouts, no walks. He was just completely dominant. That was the only story of that game other than Arcia making me look silly with 3 hits. He's been pretty good so far. I have to say that out loud. I'm not sure it'll continue, but he's been pretty good so far.
Yeah, considering what was more likely to happen, that he's been able to stitch together a couple of good games, is perfectly fine. I'm just going to be glad when he's not in the lineup on a regular basis.
I will take it. As we talked about last week a little bit, anytime that we are predicting or pointing out that guys have struggled and that we don't agree with playing guys, we're still hoping they do well. So like, it's one of those things where I'm hoping to be wrong on that. But all of the previous information tells you that he's not going to be this good. Alas.
Oh yeah. Same thing with Dansby, right? Like, you know, like Dansby
at least Dansby's been bad.
Well, like well, that's just it though. Like, you can say like, wow, he is on one of those Dansby streaks where he's historically bad. And then there's this a segment of the fan base that's just dug in on, he is the shortstop of the future and he played in our World Series and hit a home run. How dare you say anything mean about him when objectively he is a guy who for 2 months of the season is one of the best hitters in the lineup. And for the rest of the season, he's one of the worst. It is just true.
He's coming alive now a little bit at the end of this week. So we'll see.
Now, based on what's happening the last couple games, we're about to go on one of those Dansby heaters, but you will not convince me of anything other than the fact that at best, Dansby is a very inconsistent hitter. You know what I mean? And this, oh, yeah. I mean, RC is kind of a different example, is that he has no history of being a decent hitter throughout the course of his career. Other than that, he was a highly ranked prospect at one point in time, right? Anyone else is saying otherwise is just kind of the mental gymnastics to say that Orlando Arcia is a good hitter in his career and should be.
It's just never happened. It's fine. It still might happen. He's 27. Yeah. He's a talented guy. It's not like it can't happen. But to your point, like, it has not happened so far. As for Fried, like, Fried was incredible. I don't have much to add. Like, it's Max Fried looking like Max Fried at his best,
yep.
Which is kind of the only way I can describe that. He's obviously one of the best pitchers in baseball when he's got it going like that, and he did in that game. Less so the next day, Morton was not his crisp self, gave up a home run to Freeman along the way. But the bigger thing for me in the Dodgers series was the offense. They only had about, I think it was, 283 on base percentage in the series. They had 5 walks and 25 strikeouts in the 3 games against the Dodgers. So, and in general, like, the offense, while it wasn't the problem tonight on Saturday, they've only scored more than 5 runs 3 times this year, and that includes the loss tonight. So they've been okay. Like, the guys who have been good, but the offense, I think we could fairly say, has not been as good as we thought it was going to be so far. Again, it's 10% of the games. I don't really care, but if you're looking at, like, trying to sort of appropriate blame, the offense has just kind of not been quite as good as it's supposed to be so far. Maybe that's just Ronnie not being there or whatever, and the bottom of the lineup being as bad as it has been. But that has kind of been the culprit. It was definitely the culprit in the Dodgers series.
Yeah, the bottom of the lineup has been truly. I mean, Eddie Rosario has been bad. Alex Dickerson's been bad. Dansby up until recently has been really bad.
I have some numbers for you, by the way, if you're ready for them. I have some really bad numbers for you.
Well, but we can get that into a second. But I do want to ask you. We're talking about a 3-start sample, so I'm not, like, again, this is very much a. Don't draw too many conclusions, but Morton has not looked good to start the season. I wouldn't say he's looked awful, but
he's not looked good. And neither is Anderson, by the way, which is just different.
No, he's not.
He's not
really. For different reasons. Like, Ian just can't command his fastball right now. But in Morton's case, are you worried at all that maybe Father Time's catching up a little bit with Morton, because he's just not. He's not fooling guys, and, you know, he's also coming off a real injury. I mean, he got his leg broken in the World Series, so I don't want to necessarily, like, you know, you don't want to pile on a guy too much for that. But at the same time, do you have any worries about Morton? Right? I mean, like, there's legitimate reasons to worry about Anderson, again, just because the command has been really rough. But, you know, in Morton's case, like, there's kind of some, you know, inevitability to, you know, eventually he was not going to be, you know, one of the best pitchers, on whatever rotation he's in. So I was kind of curious as to kind of what your thoughts were on him.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you have a guy who's 38, 39 and does not start well coming off an injury like that. And the numbers, like, I know there's a different school of thought on how much people believe these numbers, but the stack, let's just say the Statcast numbers, like the expected ERA, expected batting average allowed, expected WOBA are all really bad. Like, it's not like he's been unlucky so far. According to the batted ball data, he's not been unlucky. He's just kind of been bad so far. Now, the combination of that and the fact that he is not young will tell you that maybe you're a little bit more concerned than you would have been normally. With Anderson, it's that I've always been a little bit skeptical of Anderson in the regular season because, you know, the sample size is not that big of him being awesome. Obviously, it's mattered when he's been under the lights. He's been really good. But it's different from Morton, who's like, you're paying Charlie Morton to be solid. Like, you're not paying Charlie Morton to be volatile. And the problem is if he is now volatile, that definitely hurts you a little bit. It's three starts. I'm not going to panic about it, but certainly your eyebrows raise more than they would. Let's just say Max Fried was bad for three starts. I would be a lot less worried than I am right now about Morton because Morton's 38 years old. It's just that's that easy. Fair. It's just that simple. I mean, I'm not worried yet, but I'm a little bit more concerned and keeping an eye on it than I would be for someone like Fried, who is the comparable pitcher to Morton on the staff in terms of like recent effectiveness. Those guys coming into the year, there was like two options of you that you could choose for the Braves best pitcher. And those are the two guys, but Fried, unless there's something wrong with his arm or he's hurt or something like that, obviously is going to be good. He has no like age or, you know, weird decline stuff. Whereas Morton just actually could be declining. He's 38 years old. So we'll see. It's a concern, you know. I mean, if Kyle Wright is prime Nolan Ryan, that it's less of a concern, but they have to have
he's heading in that direction.
But I mean, they have, but the thing is, like, even if, so let's just say, this isn't a worst case scenario, but let's say Charlie Morton is now not a top tier pitcher anymore. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm saying we assume that just for this discussion. If he's replaced by Kyle Wright being a top tier pitcher, that obviously helps you, but then you're kind of back in the same spot where you still only have two and a half guys that you trust. Like, it's not like, you know, you're just inserting a guy immediately. And I want to stress, Kyle Wright has been awesome this year. I don't think we're quite at the point where we can just assume he's going to be this guy moving forward. Maybe he is. I'm not saying he's not, but
we have listeners who have been fervent in their beliefs and a co-host for that matter.
I must say Scott Coleman is more than a listener, my friend, more than a listener. Scott Coleman is dialed in.
More targeting Joe, who basically anytime Kyle Wright's name is mentioned,
we love Joe.
He has to have like a name search just constantly rolling on Kyle, right? ready to defend him to the death.
But no, it's like, okay, I don't know. We can sort of talk about right now briefly because we're already here about pitching. Right, the numbers are crazy. Three starts, 17 innings, 11 hits, two walks, 26 strikeouts. So he has 13-1 strikeout to walk ratio. He's allowed two home runs in 17 innings. Bowman had this stat today. Among all pitchers in baseball who have allowed at least 25 balls to be put in play this year, he has the second best expected ERA and expected WOBA. So it's not like he's getting lucky. Like, the batted ball profile tells you he's been incredible.
Is Rodon above him? Is that who it is?
It was, I think it might be. I didn't see who it was because I just saw that from Bowman. I didn't check it. I can tell you the other thing that was crazy that I think it was somebody else had this, but maybe it was DOB. And I checked this one actually. He has 42 swinging strikes this year already, which is only behind Corbin Burns, who is the reigning Cy Young Award winner in the National League. The only guy that has more swings and misses than Kyle Wright so far. So we talked about him last week. I don't want to do a weekly Kyle Wright segment. Maybe we have to, ridiculous.
We might be heading there. Yeah.
I mean, maybe. Okay. So I haven't asked you about this on the record. Like, what do you make of this? I'll just leave it open-ended. What do you make of this?
So the thing that I've always said about Kyle is that his stuff always looked good the first time through the order. He certainly had nights where he didn't command it as well. And, you know, those would be relatively short starts in the minor leagues or even in the major leagues for that matter. But it was the approach that he took the second time through, not continuing to stay aggressive, not trusting his stuff, being kind of cute, trying to nibble on corners and taking some velo off his, you know, breaking ball or off his fastball to be able to command it a little better. It always just it never ended well when he was trying to fiddle with things the second time, third time through. He's just trusting his stuff now, and combine that with the best pitch that he's throwing. Well, I can't even say that because really everything's looked good, but
yeah,
the arm side run that he's getting on his fastball at times, even to like to right-handed hitters, and the swings that he's getting seems to think that he's just staying aggressive. He's just pumping it in there, getting late action on all of his pitches. And that's what's changed. It's just that he's just, look, I can throw this. I don't think you can hit it. Not, I'm going to put this in this exact spot. And it's, you know, this is exactly where, you know, I think that if I locate this, even if I have to take a couple miles an hour off my fastball to get it there, I'll do that. Because if he misses and all of a sudden it changes, it just would turn into kind of this weird nightmare scenario where the command would go and his approach would be all over the place. Whereas now he's just like, hit it if you can. And they haven't been able to, because this is a guy who was a number one, like a potential number one pick in the draft that he was drafted in. And he has all the arm talent in the world. It's just, you know, what's frustrating was it was very much like a confidence and a mental thing with him. He just wouldn't trust that what he can do with a baseball cannot be hit by people with a baseball bat. And now he can. And I don't know what changes were made to that. And he certainly, like, the quality of his pitches has improved too. And that just comes with, you know, practice and execution and understanding kind of what, you know, what kind of spin he can put on a ball and then where to locate those to get the best results. But we've seen him be good for stretches in the minor leagues. What he's doing in the major leagues right now is not anywhere close to what he was doing there. And again, a lot of it's just coming down to he trusts himself. And when you pitch with confidence and you have a lot of talent in your arm, good things can happen.
Yeah. So the only other thing I'll add about this that we should at least touch on is that in the sixth inning on Friday, Snicker came out to, I thought, take him out of the game with the bases loaded, and he left him in. It got a lot of attention, even some national attention, that Snit went out there and didn't pull him, and he got out of it. I don't ever want to make too much out of that stuff, but there was a lot of like, oh my gosh, you know, all of the confidence that gives him. Certainly doesn't, not a small thing. And as we've said a number of times on this podcast over the last few years, if there's one thing that I do believe that Brian Snicker is like truly elite at, it's managing people. For the most part, like, he seems to be really good at that. So maybe that matters a little bit and gave him even more confidence. Cause you talk about the confidence issue. Like, that's another thing. Like, maybe Stanton knew that and was like doing that on purpose to go out there and be like, hey, we believe in you. I'm just going to come out there and just kind of say hello, check in on you, and go out there and be somebody. And it worked. So I don't know. It happened. And he was, you know, thoroughly dominant. They won the game in shutout fashion, but we'll see. His next start is going to be this week, and maybe we'll do the whole thing again next week. I don't know. I mean, he's been so good that it's like appointment conversation. I think we could probably do the whole podcast on Kyle Wright and Matt Olson right now and just kind of be fine, because those guys have been incredible.
Yeah, they've been really great. Before we move on to this game that just happened on Saturday, which is going to be a frustrating one to go through, you know, Jorge Soler got a lot of love from Braves fans. And I want to thank each and every one of them, because I can't look at him without smiling. I really can't.
Okay, hold on. Did you see? And you'll probably see that what I'm going to do now. There was where I saw this was on, I think it was the Baseball Gifts Twitter account. Tonight, tweeted out this photo of after the Soler home run. Of course, I'm saying the Soler home run, and I think our listeners will know which one that it was in Game 6. And there's this screen cap, and they're all celebrating, and you can see Max Fried on the bottom right of the photo. I'm looking at it again right now. Fried, you can see only his head in the dugout. And apparently Dansby described this on a pregame interview tonight as Fried sitting there not celebrating. And I'm quoting now from Dansby, sitting there like a psychopath. And you can see Fried's picture on this. You can see on my Twitter account. I retweeted this. If you want to look at this, Eric, if you haven't seen this yet, it's incredible. It's basically just everybody else. And I mean, everybody else is going crazy celebrating. And Max Fried is looking like a crazy person, dialed in, sitting in his seat, like not even moving, just staring straight ahead.
I did see that.
It's so good.
It is really good.
I had to just mention that because it came through my timeline tonight, it's and I saw it. And oh my gosh, it's great.
It's such a, like, that story's always going to be about a pitcher too, right? Like, all those stories are like, you know, like the guy just sat there and just didn't talk to anybody and just looked like he was going to kill somebody. When they're in the zone like that, like, it's always a pitcher story.
And also Dansby noticing it too. Like, Dansby, like, taking the time to notice that he was doing that in the midst of everything else. Oh my gosh. It's so good. But yeah, I was glad too.
Jorge Soler.
Yeah. I mean, it was great to see him get that acknowledgement. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you give him a starting ovation in his return, And then you go at him the rest of the series. That's the way it should be. By the way, it should be the same thing when Freddy comes back. People are gonna be upset about that. I get it, but like when Freddy comes back, his first Blade appearance should be a standing ovation. And then from there, you can boo him if you want to. It's fine.
I think that's how it will happen too.
I think so too. But we'll see.
He's if he does anything of note against the Braves, he's gonna get the crap boot out of him.
And that's fine.
But for that first at bat, I think there's enough love there.
Yeah, absolutely. Other than that, on Friday, Travis Demeritt's season, after all this time, and he technically debuted in the majors for a different team, but after he was a prospect that I know you talked about a lot, him coming up and actually playing in a major league game for the Braves on Friday was kind of cool.
It's definitely been a long road from when a notable writer claimed that Travis Demeritt was a better second base prospect than Ozzie Albies in the Braves farm system, which didn't really work out, but it's cool to see him make it get a chance. And he hit a double in the game, so it was good to actually see him contribute in the game too. I was really confused at first because I'm not sure why I think the order I just saw that Travis Demeritt was making his debut, and I didn't understand what had happened. But then, you know, Adam Duvall was dealing with a family issue, and
I was confused. I was like, wait, Duvall sitting as a left-hander? Like, this is so weird. Like, why is he sitting now?
Yeah, something was going on. And I was like, what? This is like of all, like that's like the one time you really want Adam Duvall into. But overall, it was cool to see. I still don't think, he's a guy that just strikes out too much, and you know, he will be fun for a few games here and there, but largely, you know, I wouldn't read too much into it other than the Braves just happen to have a guy, you know, on their 40 man that was around that could fill in for a game here and there, especially with Drew Waters out.
It's mostly just cool that he was able to do it. Obviously, I don't think he's going to be a huge part of the core or anything like that, but
there is a small but vocal segment of the one every time he gets a home run is when is he going to get a chance?
I mean, he always looks great when he's playing well. Like he's physically, he has tools. There's never been a question about that. It's just whether he put it all together.
For about 20 games a year. Yeah.
I'll defer to you on that. We're not going to do a whole recap of the game tonight because it's going to be out of date by tomorrow, but there was some stuff that we have to at least touch on. Early, by the way, there was some like pseudo major league history that happened early in this game. Both teams led off the game with first pitch leadoff home runs from Jazz Chisholm and Ozzie Albies. The second time that's happened since 1988, which is when pitch counts were actually tracked. Second time in baseball, like in, you know, 30 plus years, that's actually happened. That's pretty crazy. By the way, again, as mentioned earlier, that's Ozzie's sixth of the season. He tied for the major league lead. Crazy stuff there. We talked about Anderson and Dickerson's home run and the fact that the previous 16 home runs were solo. That's a crazy stat in itself. Colin McHugh had a rough one, let's just say. He is still good at baseball. I'm not worried, but he was bad in this game. And also, Spencer Strider finally had a bad night. He faced four batters and got no outs and had no command. He got squeezed a little bit, I will say.
I was about to say, hold on. Like, let's be clear. He threw four strikes in that at bat that he gave up a walk.
Yeah, that was tough.
So like I'm not gonna pile on Spencer too much.
No, I'm not worried. It's just like notable because it was rough. Yeah. But and then Will Smith did not look great, but in typical Will Smith fashion, like the one almost home run he allowed was a sack fly and he gave up nothing else, so actually didn't do too much damage. And they were still in the game.
I had flashbacks.
Yes.
That's for sure.
They were still in the game, but obviously it was kind of a back and forth loss, 9-7. They never were able to get back over the hump at the end. In the middle of what was largely a bad night for the Braves, we talked about Dansby earlier, but just wanted to say this out loud. Dansby had a triple early in the game and then a two-run single to give them the lead. And he has been very bad this year, but Dansby has now, this is going to sound funny, he has now improved his WRC plus to 56 on the season, which is actually a lot better than it was. Well, it was,
all he has to do is put a ball in play to do that. Yeah.
It was like 10 previously. And it's a good time now to kind of just take stock of some of the bad stuff. Cause just to be positive for a second, Albies, Matt Olson, Austin Riley, Marcelo Ozuna, and Travis d'Arnaud have all been awesome this year. Those five guys, and then RC has been pretty good. And those six guys have been hitting, and basically no one else has hit. Dansby's been better recently.
Like at all.
I mean, literally at all. I mean, other than those six guys, and that's we're generously including Arcia with about 30 plate appearances in there. But Dansby, Duvall, Eddie Rosario still has a negative WRC plus for the season. For as much attention as Dansby's gotten, Rosario has been much worse
player among qualified players in baseball.
Yeah, he's
really bad.
Well, because the defense is so bad.
I don't
have
an answer.
Yeah, it's not been good. I know people have said this before, and I'll say it one more time now. He has been a slow starter. If you look at his career numbers, his worst month by a lot is April. So that's a little bit of a consolation prize. Maybe he just takes a while. There are some guys that do that, but it's been pretty bad. Dickerson had the home run tonight, but he's been both unlucky and bad so far. And then you get into the bottom of the play appearance tab, and it's like Heredia and Manny Pena are struggling as well. So not a lot going on in the bottom of the order. That's not breaking news, but it was good to see Dansby kind of show a little bit, and had, you know, what should have been, if the Braves had won this game, it would have been the biggest swing of the game with that two run single in the sixth to give him the lead. They didn't hold it, but he's been at least showing signs, which is good.
Yeah, they definitely have to get some contributions from the bottom of the lineup, especially with Ronnie coming back.
Something would be
good. Like when you have a guy like that at the top of your lineup, you would like to occasionally have a runner on base.
Well, and here's the thing, like, okay, if you go through the top guys, if you wanted to be negative, if you wanted to be, you would say that I don't think anyone out of the top five is expected to be as good as they've been so far. Like, maybe close. You could say maybe Albies could repeat this. Maybe Riley could repeat this.
Riley, I feel like, is kind of like in line with what.
Yeah, he's a little bit above where I would say, but even then, like, he's been good. Olsen's going to cool off because he has to. Like, he's been unbelievable.
Okay, 400. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's been unbelievable this year. So I'm not saying any of those guys are going to be bad, because they're not. But if you want to, like, take the negative approach, you could say, look, these top five guys are probably all going to, if anything, get a little bit worse than they've been so far. So you're going to have to get something else on the bottom of the lineup. And that's going to happen. Like, there's no way, knock on wood, I suppose, that the combination of Swanson, Duvall, Rosario, basically anybody else at the bottom of the lineup is going to be this bad. There's just no way that's going to happen. Now, how good they are is up for debate, for sure. There's a chance Rosario is just not good. That's possible. There's a chance Dansby doesn't really have it.
I do not think he's the worst player in baseball.
No, he's not. There's no question about that. He's not this bad. But Duvall is famously a hot and cold guy too, and he he'll always have a couple of runs during the season. He's kind of like mini Dansby in that way, where like he'll go crazy for a month and then he'll be bad for a month, and it is what it is. At the end of the day, you look up and Duvall will be a league average hitter, because that's just what he is. But it's sort of a roller coaster to get there. So anyway, that's the state of the of things right now. In terms of like the actual like raw numbers, the numbers are fine for the offense. They're not like incredible by any means, but I'm doing the live up there right now on the live stats, including today. And the Braves are essentially right in the middle of the pack in offense. They have a 107 WRC plus. That's pretty good. That's like, 12th in the league, something like that. So I think they're better than that overall, especially with Ronald Acuna, but they have not quite found their stride just yet on offense. Anything else like strike you to talk about before we get out of here? I mean, the bullpen had a really bad night tonight. No question about that. I don't worry about the bullpen at all, really, until I see evidence to actually panic. But there's still too much talent there for me to worry about that. And it was just kind of a one-off against a Marlins team. It's not great at offense, which is a little bit concerning, I guess, but no concerns for me.
Yeah, I think that all this stuff's going to work out. They're going to add Ronald Acuna Jr. to the lineup, which is going to be a really big addition to the lineup. I think that a lot of this kind of unlucky stuff and just not being able to string offense together stuff is going to be solved, at least presumably, by him returning. They're just a much better offensive team when he's in the lineup. I do want, in a little bit of Mets news, it looks like that, I'd say former Met, Michael Conforto, who famously like, I just hurt my shoulder. I just had to work back.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. He's out for the year. Yeah.
He's out for the year. Had to have shoulder surgery. So, it could always be worse. You could be Michael Conforto who never signed. Never signed with anybody and now is unemployed. And
I would imagine there was probably some concern about his physical, because usually guys have to take a physical and he may not have passed that physical to sign.
If he had to have shoulder surgery,
that's what I'm saying. So like maybe the whole thing was like, teams maybe knew that he couldn't pass physical. I don't know. I'm just guessing, but yeah, that was notable tonight. It broke up while we were recording. So that was a when it was going, I guess it's still pretty bad, but when it was pretty bad early this year, I saw some Braves fans like Conforto, and I'm like, well, he's better than what they have, but it's not like they could spend that much money. I mean, he wanted real money too, so.
He wanted real money, and it was pretty telling that he hadn't signed anywhere yet. So there was clearly
There was a thought that maybe he was like going to pull a Dallas Keuchel and just like sign a 1-year deal in June, basically, and just try to go back on the market again. But now we know why he didn't do that. So, alas. Okay, from here, we're not going to do any preview stuff on Sunday because the game's going to be happening fairly soon as we record this. But they do play Miami in the afternoon on Sunday in a finale with Bryce Elder on the mound. And they have an off day on Monday, and then it's 3 at home against the Cubs. And then 3 games on the road against the Texas Rangers. Not 2 fantastic teams on paper. So some winnable games coming up here for the Braves. Obviously, it remains very early. Just as we talk right now, the Rangers are 5-9 and the Cubs are 7-8 at the moment. So we will see. Any other thoughts?
Hoping that as long as the Cubs don't put up 21 runs, I think the Braves will perform pretty well against the Cubs. Same thing.
I swear to God, I almost cited their run differential, and then I remembered that they won 21-0 today. So it
was I will say that the Braves have not won a series this year yet, and it would probably be. And considering that the slate for April was supposed to be pretty easy, it would be in their best interest to win one, if not both of those series.
Well, now they can win on Sunday.
If they could listen
to this on Sunday afternoon or evening, they might have won the series today. I don't know, but they can win it on Sunday. And if they don't, you're right though. It would behoove them to get some wins. Bringing it full circle to the top of the podcast, like my feelings are what they are. Like even the projection systems, they're not, panicking about the Braves, nor should they at this point. As we record this, the Mets are 11-5, so they are 4 games back in the Mets. That's not nothing. I'll say that. And maybe the Mets are good. They are the Mets. But we acknowledge.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Well, yeah, we acknowledge this preseason as well in the spring. But we kind of said, look, the Mets are the most talented team other than the Braves in the division. We all kind of know that. They're also the Mets. They are playing well. They lost tonight as we're recording on Saturday, but I think it is also very clear to me that if the Braves were to have competition, it's still probably going to be the Mets. We'll see if that happens, but the Mets at the moment have been as good as any team other than the Dodgers in the National League. So it's small sample size, as they say.
Yeah. A lot of weirdness going around. And I think that, ultimately the Braves for fans who are listening, I know that it's been frustrating like first few weeks, but the Braves are going to be fine.
I believe the same thing. I'm sort of conflicted about this because of last year and just like how long they were mediocre to even worse than that last season. And then they found it, and that's all that matters at the end of the day. But the one thing that is like, we can't say for sure that they're going to be great because we just don't know. But I tend to believe my priors more than what they've done so far. So only time will tell, Eric. We're not allowed to judge the team just yet. Memorial Day is not even close to being here yet.
That's the
old saying. Yeah. The old saying, as they say.
Yeah. Okay. Don't even look at the standings until then. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I broke that rule just 5 seconds ago, but alas, it's too
what
early.
What a rebel. In the season.
I am certainly against the grain. Okay. We're both exhausted. It's now we're into Sunday as we record this. So we're going to sign off, but, Eric, anything to plug other than Road to Atlanta, which we already talked about earlier, but lots of stuff going on the podcast as well as the site itself. So what's going on your end?
Before too long, we're going to be starting doing draft coverage, pre-draft coverage. The Braves have. Yep, it's coming. So we're going to be talking a little bit about the guys who we'd like the Braves to pick. Down the line, I'm sure we'll talk about more about guys that we're hearing that could be connected to the Braves.
July 17th, by the way, is the date of the draft.
Yep. Yep. We start early. We start it's often. We make sure we cover the crap out of it. So we're going to continue to do that. And so before too long here, probably starting in first couple weeks of May, we're going to start kind of slowly kind of rolling into what our pre-draft coverage. And beyond that, just make sure you go to the site, check every day. If you want to know what's going on in the minor leagues, we recap every single minor league game, including the ones that happened today where I had to write that recap before I came onto this very podcast. If there's a minor league game that happens, we recap it. So make sure you check out the site every day at 10 o'clock.
There you go. Check it out. Please patronize the site. each and every day. And please subscribe to this podcast on the player of your choice, whether it be Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Facebook has podcasts now, all kinds of places. Stitcher, really? I mentioned before. Yes. If you go to our Facebook page, you can actually see that it auto-populates. Same thing from my Locked On Hawks podcast, which I never promote on the show because I probably should do that. But yeah, if you have a Facebook account on that is officially for your entity, you can set it up to where it auto-populates and it becomes a podcast feed, which is occurring. That's life. The only place that we're not for this podcast is on YouTube, but we do have a battery powered TV show on YouTube, so that's also available with Corey and Grant. They do a great job as well. We have every single podcast platform, every single video platform, written platform, minor league coverage, major league coverage, etc. It's all there for you, so please subscribe, check us out, and I appreciate the patronage. Eric, thank you, sir, for joining me late into the evening. Get an hour of sleep and then you're off here to do whatever you're doing. So
appreciate it, man. Thanks.
As for everybody else, we'll be back again next week with this show. But in the meantime, you'll have Road Atlanta, I believe, and you'll definitely have Daily Hammer along the way in the next few days. So subscribe, and we'll see you next time.